Hello, and welcome to the Community IT Innovators Technology Topics Podcast, where we discuss nonprofit technology, cybersecurity, tech project implementation, strategic planning, and nonprofit IT careers. Find us at communityit.com.
Welcome. My name is Carolyn Woodard, and we're here with the Community IT Podcast, talking to my colleagues, Matt and Jose Antonio today. So Jose Antonio, would you like to introduce yourself and what you do at Community IT?
Sure. Thank you. So my name is Jose Antonio, as you said, and I am the Director of Support Services. And I basically oversee the help desk operations and the on-site support team operations.
So you're responsible for the help desk. Do you set their schedule? Do you also see what they're seeing? Like how, what role does that responsibility take?
Right. So in my role, I oversee the operations in general. We do have a manager for the help desk that actually monitors their schedule. We do have a coordinator who also assigns appointments and manages all the appointments on the help desk. Technicians, which I did before because I was in that role as a manager before, before we even had a coordinator. It's pretty busy there. So we kind of have the need to have these two roles, coordinating all the appointments with the users for the help desk for all of our clients.
It's a lot. It's a lot. I didn't realize until Matt did the webinar last week that there's over 7,000 end users that we're supporting. So, of course, they need to have help desk available and able to answer their questions. And you see a lot of other issues as well. So not just cybersecurity, but I'm guessing that cybersecurity is a big chunk of what the help desk is seeing. So I'd like to turn it over to Matt, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself and what your role is at Community IT and how you approach this problem of cybersecurity.
Sure. So my name is Matthew Eshelman. I'm the Chief Technology Officer at Community IT. And in my role, really have kind of two different primary responsibilities. So one is I oversee our centralized services team. So that's the back-end team that manages those devices, right? So you mentioned 7,000 endpoints. So we centrally manage all of those, provide a lot of core cybersecurity through those platforms, ensuring consistency and access to our remote support team. And then in my other role, really responsible for driving the cybersecurity strategy and planning with our clients and helping them with adoption and new technology initiatives. So kind of this internal, kind of capacity building role and then working externally to really align clients with the appropriate cybersecurity controls for their organization's needs.
Thank you guys both so much for joining me. Jose Antonio, I wanted to bring you in because you're such a dynamic speaker for starters. And I just thought it would be interesting because Matt and I just did this webinar last week about the cybersecurity incident report. And so taking all of that information from our end users, and Matt did a bunch of analysis on it and presented a lot of that information in that webinar. So I was just hoping that I could get you to kind of weigh in a little bit on what that means for users.
Of course, yes. Happy to do so. Yes. Thank you for inviting me.
Excellent. So I know last week when we talked about the cybersecurity incident report, one of the charts that you showed that was pretty alarming was all of the unwanted email increasing exponentially. And I know I've been seeing a lot more email in my inbox. And of course, we know that's just the tip of the iceberg. We have a lot of automatic tools that are keeping like the worst spam out of your inbox. Could you talk a little bit more about maybe why the unwanted email is increasing so much?
Yeah, well, I mean, I do think that the reason why it's increasing is that, it's ultimately effective. And I say that, insofar as what we're dealing with and trying to protect against are cyber criminals, and cyber criminals are interested in finances. And I think that's an important understanding is that While there is a certain class of threat actors that might be into espionage or stealing data or something, at the end of the day, most of these organizations are getting paid to do their work. And even though email, maybe isn't as popular as a communication tool as it once was, it is still really effective. And so for these threat actors to, use these phishing tactics to get you to click on a link with the ultimate goal of, either directly engaging in, sending them gift cards or updating some wire payment information, or maybe just using your account to target somebody else. It's really financially motivated, and we're seeing that reported in the FBI statistics in terms of just the increase in financial crime year over year. So again, it's, the bad guys use it because it works. And I think that's the reason why we're seeing so much increase in two categories of messages, right? So spam, maybe just kind of the unwanted messages, relatively benign, but then also the phishing, which carries the connotation of some additional risk for the recipients.
Can I turn it over to you, Jose Antonio, and ask you the opposite side of that question? So if you have a user that has received something that they don't want to receive in their inbox, what's your advice for them? What should they do about it?
A lot of our tickets related to incidents are basically that spam, as Matt is mentioning. A lot of the tickets are users asking, is this legit? Is this an email that I should trust? Can I open this? Or maybe I click on this link and now I don't know if my computer is infected or my account might have been compromised. So we do have certain protocols that, of course, start with a basic analysis of the email. And depending on what the technicians find in this email, they might advise to either, block the sender, or if we suspect that there is a possible compromised account or the email is, represents a threat, then maybe we can we have to escalate this to a more advanced engineering team. And usually the technicians also work with centralized services, which is the team that Matt was mentioned, he's overseeing too, to understand and determine the risk of every email. Not all the time, but there are certain protocols that we follow and we recommend to the users to follow, depending on what we find in the ticket.
I know that often there are certain roles that you want to have a lot more training and a lot more security around, like your chief financial officer, people who are in, accounts payable, the finance team, maybe the development team as well that are getting those major gifts. Do you pay special attention if the person submitting the ticket has a role like that where they may be more targeted?
So our recommendations are for everyone, not only for the CFO of the company or for specific roles. But it is probably true that certain roles in the company are more prone to have this risk of being attacked or being targeted. So usually we recommend to pay attention if you receive an attachment. Do you trust the sender? Do you know the purpose of this attachment? Did you know the sender? So don't open the attachment if you don't really know the source of that attachment, or if you don't, or you're expecting it. The same with links. So don't click on any link unless you hover the mouse over the link and you see what is taking you to. And do you trust the sender? Were you expecting this? These are kind of basic recommendations that we do when we analyze spam. Check, fields like the from field to see if it's coming from a source that you trust. Practices that we recommend when you're reading emails, don't respond to any spam. Don't click on unsubscribe. Just delete the email. And basically report anything that looks suspicious to Community IT, because that's would allow us to do a better analysis of the email and maybe give you the best advice.
I know in a past webinar, we talked with someone who works in cybersecurity who said she'd rather get 99 false tickets that weren't anything and still catch that one that was very dangerous than have people be worried about bothering you or maybe it's fine, I'm not going to report it. She said, just try to cultivate a culture where everyone is reporting something if they think it might be something and let the experts figure out if it is something or not. Don't try to do that analysis yourself, which I felt like that was good advice. I want to move on and ask about something, Matt, that you spoke about last week about fake virus pop-ups that people are starting to see. So I feel like for myself, it's been a while since I've seen a pop-up that just opens and then it's like blinking and flashing and says, oh, you've got a virus. Can you talk a little bit more about that, Matt, and what you're seeing?
Yeah, I think, you know, the days of pop-ups in my memory is like, oh, that was like a long time ago. And having pop-up blockers, like that was like a really big, a big deal. I think in general, kind of the pop-up ads and that kind of stuff seems to have been solved. But what we do see, and again, we're managing 7,000 endpoints. And so, you know, we've got a kind of a big window there, or insight into a lot of different devices. But when those pop-ups do occur, they are really unsettling. And so oftentimes that will occur as Carolyn, you mentioned, right? Like a pop-up that, oh, you've got a virus or your computer is going to be encrypted or you need to call us right away so that we can, you know, unfreeze your device. And so it's really a social engineering attack, right? They're trying to prompt a behavior from, you know, from whoever, you know, is falling victim to that attack. And so, you know, on the one hand, if you have a little bit of insight or you've gone through a training or you've kind of seen this before, it's, you know, really easy to maybe take a deep breath, step back, you know, hit Alt F4, you know, close out of the window and boom, you solve the problem. The challenge comes is whenever, you know, that sense of anxiety, you know, kind of rises and all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, like, what do I do? My computer is being taken over. I need to call this number to get help right away. Again, which is kind of what the attackers want you to do. And so, again, I think, you know, it's a training piece. It's one of those unique areas of cyber attack where even though we've got all kinds of different protections and controls, like just somebody putting a message on your screen is enough to, you know, if they do it enough, right, somebody ultimately falls for it. So it's really hard to protect against technically. It's something that, you know, we kind of look at continually. And this is an area where training is, you know, is one of those areas where it's really effective to understand what it is, to understand what you're seeing, and then know how to just close it out. You know, maybe if the X is not visible, or, you know, they're obfuscating that. But
Jose Antonio, do you get people who call in a panic? Either because they have a pop-up or something else is happening on their laptop and they're not sure what to do.
Yes, that happens. That happens. It doesn't happen as often as the spam emails, but it does happen. And the good, it's good when it happens before they actually take any actions. It's really bad when they actually fall for that message. And usually there is a pop-up that says not only your computer has been infected, but also you need to call this number. And so they fall into what Matt can confirm, this is social engineering. So they call and they and the person who is supposed to be a technician or help this team answers the phone and they say, oh yeah, your computer's been infected, let me access your computer, and they fall for everything they ask, and that's how they get into all this information. And that usually ends on a ticket that we have to escalate, because at that point the computer has already been compromised, not only the computer but the account, everything. But it's good when they call before that. So when they say, okay, I have this pop-up, I can't do anything, can you please get rid of this? So I think that's why I mentioned training is so important, because the earlier we get it, the earlier we cut that, the more we can do to prevent any harm.
Yeah, I think that just goes back to what we said before of as early as possible, submit the ticket before it goes farther. It's really invasive, I feel like, that... especially if the way you would usually submit the ticket is on your laptop, right? And your laptop is telling you you can't do anything because you have a virus. So maybe it makes sense to have the phone number also on your desk somewhere, physically written down, call this number to the help desk if your something is so haywire on your laptop that you don't feel comfortable in trying to submit a ticket even.
Sometimes these pop-ups come because you install an add-on from a website that you visited, or maybe you visited a place that you should not have visited, and then your prompt is with messages, right? So I don't know if there is any way to prevent that, really. I don't know if one of our, like we have Umbrella, right? I don't know if Umbrella does prevent that somehow.
I mean, I think the challenge is that these things kind of pop up, you know, no pun intended, but pop up relatively infrequently. Like I think we had maybe 60 or 70 of these reported last year, but 60 or 70 out of 7,000 devices, right? So the relative rate is not that frequent. And so clearly, like, you know, we have a lot of tools in place that are blocking a lot of these things proactively, you know, but for whatever, you know, for whatever reasons, in some cases, they're able to, you know, to kind of get these messages to pop up by, you know, maybe kind of malware, like advertising, you know, they kind of get through like a malicious Google ad or something. And, you know, what pops up today, you know, maybe in a few hours, like the system will catch up and block it. But, you know, at the scale that we're dealing with, you know, some stuff is just going to kind of come through. And so, you know, I do think, you know, that old adage, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure is really appropriate in cybersecurity. And so if you can just reach out, you know, for us, for our clients, you know, our help desk, I think is really great. You know, they can call directly, they can get into touch with somebody, you know, right away, or, you know, so it's not like that you have to like wait around. And so if you can make that call and we can prevent it, you know, that's a 15-minute call as opposed to, you know, if you click on it and follow the stuff right now, we're into multiple hours of cleanup and disruption. And so that, you know, ounce of prevention is really a good thing to keep in mind when it comes to cybersecurity, because it saves so much time down the road.
I think that speaks to training as well, because what the situation you're talking about, I think we talked about it in the past as the cat and mouse. So the hackers are trying to find ways around your prevention, and you're trying to catch up with new prevention to prevent their new ways. And so as that's changing so quickly, and AI is going to make it change even more rapidly now, having staff have up-to-date training as soon as you're seeing trends or seeing something new happening is really important. I think the days of being able to do one annual cybersecurity training are long gone. I wanted to go back a little bit to emails and just ask, you spoke earlier, Jose Antonio, about a compromised account. And I know that sometimes you will receive an email that looks like it's coming from maybe a colleague, maybe a vendor, maybe a partner, someone that you work with, but it's, and it is their email, but it's not them sending it. It's because a hacker has somehow gained control of their domain or their email that they're sending. And that can happen to you also, right? Your email could be being used to attack someone that you're a partner with. So are there ways to check if it looks like a real email? How that seems just so insidious to me, because we tell people, you know, look at the address. If it's spelled wrong, almost closely, but not quite, then it's not real. But what if it really is a real email? What can you do about that?
Yeah, that's true. And I think web guys are getting better and better every day. So it's every time we see new things that is, wow, this is easily, you know, can be easily missed. So yeah, there are, the account might have been compromised and they're using an account to reach out to you that was compromised before, or the email might be spoofed and it looks like it's coming from someone else. So those are difficult cases. I think it's important to pay attention. What is the request on this email? If it's a financial transaction, maybe it's good to pick up the phone and confirm with that other person, you know, is this real? Is this legit? Are you asking me for this information? Use encryption on your emails, which your IT department might help you understand how it works and how to implement it if you don't have it. Validate information over the phone, pay attention to a sense of urgency, pay attention to typos in the email. I think those are the basics that you need to pay attention. And lastly, again, go back to your IT department, report it, and have them take a look at this email to make sure that it looks safe and legit.
That's really good advice, to pay attention to the content. Like, does this content seem like something this partner or this vendor would be asking for or would be telling me? Because that, like, is using your human part of your brain to try right. and outwit maybe some AI or some hackers. Matt, can I go back to you just for a quick question about the new attack you talked about last week, the attacker in the middle, and how that impacts the multi-factor authentication? So we've been telling people for a while to use MFA on all their accounts, including your personal accounts, social media accounts, et cetera. Now that there's this new attacker in the middle where that MFA is not completely 100% protecting you anymore, what should people be doing?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting thing that we saw whenever reviewing the data from all of the incidents that the remote services team took in, is just the number of accounts that we responded to that were compromised that also had multi-factor authentication enabled. And so I think a lot of these things are connected. So the increase in sophistication in phishing, they're using what's called an attacker in the middle attack. So you may receive a message from somebody that you actually work with, maybe their account's compromised, that has a link. And instead of going directly to, their Office 365 account or Dropbox or whatever, it's instead using what's called a proxy. So again, there's a connection between kind of your computer and the website that you're ultimately trying to get to. And that proxy is actually able to steal your login session. So it's a little bit technical, and there's lots of good articles out there that talk about how this happens. But fundamentally, what they're able to do is they're able to steal that authentication session and then reuse it and maybe add their own method for MFA. And so what we're now moving to is, particularly for people in trusted roles, but using the physical security keys or pass keys. And so what that does, and how it's a little bit different than the authenticator app on your phone, is that there's some additional kind of technical work that ties the physical device to your account, as opposed to it just being a second method. And those are, known as phish-resistant MFA methods, and they're becoming a lot more common, I think a lot more useful, particularly with these proxy attacks where they can kind of steal the MFA session. So for organizations, that have staff, again, finance operations, IT departments, people that can have access to sensitive information, moving to these phish-resistant MFA methods is really important as part of the overall protection plan to secure the organization.
So that means that even if someone has a proxy between you and logging in with your MFA session, and they're trying to do that remotely, they can't, because the physical key that's going to allow that session is physically with you. Is that how that works?
Yes, that's exactly correct. So we're kind of going beyond, to multi-factor authentication. We typically describe it as something that you have and something that you know, which is your password, and this authenticator app is something that you have. There's some technical nuance there about what you have, but these physical security keys really do fulfill that requirement of something that you physically have and is required to make that kind of final authentication. So instead of it just being that token that can be kind of portable, the service, right, Microsoft or Google, they're actually looking for the physical device that you retain as opposed to an authentication token, which can be stolen.
All right, last question for both of you. Is there one thing that you wish users would know about cybersecurity? One thing that's the most important?
Never call those numbers on those pop-up ads that come into your browser. Never, ever, ever, ever. Don't ever call to that number. That's the most important thing, I think.
Well, I think you said earlier, Jose Antonio, don't engage. Don't respond to an email. Don't click on the thing. Don't have any interaction with something you think is suspicious. And that includes don't call the number they give you. Yep. Matt, do you have one thing you'd like to leave people with?
I think being attentive is good. You know, understanding some of those basic cybersecurity techniques, to particularly evaluating email, right? If you're not sure who the message is from, you know, you can hit reply, and then that will often reveal the actual sender's address. And so that can be a good visual cue. Being able to hover over the links, again, that can be helpful. Also be a little tricky, especially if there's spam filters, right? They tend to replace those things. But just having a basic understanding of how email addresses are constructed and how website links work, I think that's a good use of 15 or 20 minutes of your time to spend a little bit of time learning how those things work.
That makes sense. I think being attentive, paying attention, and being suspicious, right? Developing that healthy sense of suspicion also helps you keep an eye on what's coming into your inbox or popping up on your screen. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me today. I really appreciate your time. Thank you, Jose Antonio, for all of your work. And Matt, thank you so much for doing that incident report and sharing that those statistics with us. Thank you.
Great. It's good to have this conversation.
Happy to help. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Community IT does these free webinars and podcasts for our community, and we love sharing our knowledge and experience. If you have more questions or are having trouble with your IT at your nonprofit, please get in touch with us on our website, www.communityit.com, so we can start a conversation or schedule an assessment. Downloading any of our free resources there will get you signed up for our webinar reminders, and you can attend our next webinar in real time and ask our experts your own questions. If you love podcasts, please subscribe and leave us a rating to help others find this leadership resource for nonprofits.